Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, a show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with some guests I'll be welcoming onto the show very shortly, we're going to take a journey into the magical world of movies. And today, we'll be focusing on psychological thrillers exploring identity. Have you ever looked in the mirror and wondered why your reflection doesn't look entirely familiar? Well then, you share the same identity crisis as some of the sorry protagonists in the films we'll be exploring today. But before we get to that, let me begin by introducing our guests for this week. Ivan Malekin, alongside his partner Sarah Jane Portelli, run Nexus Production Group. The couple have been based here in Malta since 2018, after relocating here from Australia. They produce improvised films, both shorts and full-length features, as well as giving training workshops about improvisation in film and micro-budget filmmaking. Citing Joe Swanberg, Mike Lee and Gaspar Noé as favourite directors, Ivan and Sarah join me here in the studio today. Great to have you both here. Welcome onto the show.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for having us, Andrew.
Awesome to have you here. Thanks for coming in today. So tell me a little bit, to start with, about how you both got involved in film. How was your love of the movies born?
Well, that's a long story, because we've been making films for a long time, since 2006. I didn't want to be a filmmaker when I was young. It wasn't until my mid-20s where I started making films. I wanted to be a novelist, so I was writing fantasy novels. I'd done professional writing at uni, but I had a friend at uni who used to love making horror films, and he wrote me into acting in his films, you know, writing with him. Eventually I'll be co-director with him, and I just fell in love with filmmaking from there. So it was a love affair that began and continues to this day.
Great. And what about you, Sarah?
My story is a little bit different. I was always a creative child. I was always drawing, dancing, writing, painting. But then in 2006, I fell into an art department role. I was actually working in a supermarket, and someone called me and said, "Hey, we've heard that you're a great art director. Do you want to be on our film?" And I didn't know what they were talking about. I think it was a case of mistaken identity. I never really solved that mystery, but I ended up coming onto a TV set for a local TV program called, I think it was Channel 31 in Melbourne. So I built a police station, I dressed it from scraps that we found on the street, we painted it, and then we went live with that show. And then I got hooked on doing art department, and I was just looking for roles all over Melbourne. That's how I fell into it. And then I think in 2009 that I met you, Ivan?
We met each other on a film set.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, we didn't meet on the film set. We worked on the same set, but on different days. The film got into a festival called Tropfest, which was a popular festival in Sydney. We went there, different states, and we met each other at the after party and became friends from there.
Fantastic. Okay. So, as I read in the introduction, you're involved in improvised filmmaking. Tell me a little bit about how that differs from conventional filmmaking.
Well, the main difference is there is no script. There might be an outline, so you still do have an idea of where you want the story to go and the character beats and so on. But basically, you don't write any dialogue out. You let the actors improvise the dialogue. So it's about getting the actors in the moment, you know, knowing the character really thoroughly, and just getting to be the character and react naturally to what's happening around them.
Yeah, before that, we were doing scripted work, and we just felt really heavy. We really were losing the love for filmmaking. We're like, what are we going to do to, like, get this passion and this excitement back? And in 2017, after watching a lot of improvised films from Joe Swanberg and the Mumblecore era, we really thought we need to do something fun. So on New Year's, we had planned to shoot an improvised film with some actor friends that we knew, and so we just did it. We shot a feature film in 24 hours, improvised, and we fell in love with it again, and we fell in love with improvised film as well.
And been doing it ever since.
I see. So just to be clear then, you might have an outline of the story, the plot you want to sort of try and exposit in the film, but you don't have a clear set of scenes and dialogue lines that need to be spoken.
That's correct. There's no dialogue that needs to be spoken. You might have an idea of where you want the actor to go, but you leave it up to the actor to, like, you know, discover the truth of the moment.
Right. So we work a lot with the actors in the rehearsal process. We go back into time and we work with the actors to actually build the characters.
So would you give them, like, a character backstory, or would that be developed collaboration with the actor?
We do. We always start with a character history, but as we begin rehearsing, there's a lot of stuff that gets struck out of the history. It's not working. You know, the actor's not connecting with this history, and, like, you know, we discuss in detail, we add parts in, and, like, so you start with a basic outline, a basic history, and then you develop them more in rehearsals with the actor.
Really interesting. And so this is a question that I wonder about. How does that work in terms of takes? Do you tend to still repeat scenes and do several takes? And are they always very different, or are you sort of more exploratory in the way you shoot?
We do several takes, and they are often different, so it gives you plenty of options in the edit. It is actually one of the biggest challenges with improvised filmmaking is maintaining continuity, you know, because lines are different each take, even the actor movements are different each take. So that's a challenge, but it also gives you so much more options in post-production. You know, there's all these different ways that the scene has gone, and you get to decide in the edit what's the best for your story.
Yeah, if we like what we see, we just let the actors play it out, and then we just cut it when we find that it's starting to go a bit stale. And if we like something that we actually found in that take, we'll say, can you just elaborate more on this part when you talked about this and that? And that's how we sort of work.
Interesting. So can you tell me about one of your recent productions?
Yep, Machination was the latest film. You're actually in it, Andrew, as a character, as the landlord for... the main character, Maria. So we based it on the actual pandemic that the whole world is going through. It was about Maria. She was isolated in her home, but she also has undiagnosed schizophrenia. So, you know, as she becomes trapped in her home, the fear is really increasing in her mind, and she's beginning to see hallucinations and, you know, slowly beginning to lose her sense of self.
Without giving too much away, she's also dealing with a lot of trauma from her past as well, so it's a bit psychological, and it's very much about mental illness.
Interesting. So it's a film about the struggle someone goes through in the pandemic, and just to clarify, this is also an improvised full-length feature film?
It is a full-length feature, yes, right in post-production at the moment, almost finished the first pass of the edit. Too slow.
But yeah,
we shot it this summer, so yeah, feature film, completely improvised.
Gosh. And what's the plan with distribution for that? Will that be an online presentation, or are you going for theatre screenings?
We would be great to actually screen it in Malta, in the cinema, Spazio Creative. I love that cinema. But it all depends on what the situation is like in the world at that stage. We aim to have it done, you know, early next year, and at the moment there's whole restrictions in place. You know, you can't have many people gathered in the public in a cinema, so we'll see. But definitely also online, Amazon Prime, you know, Vimeo, there's a whole bunch of platforms we can get onto with the film.
Right, because I believe you've got some of your previous work has gone onto the streaming platforms already.
Yeah, Friends, Foes and Fireworks is on DVD through North America, and the one we shot in 24 hours, and it's also on Amazon and a few different platforms as well, and through our website as well.
Well, even like we're releasing a feature at the moment called Incorporate, which we made when we first arrived in Malta. It's an anthological story. It's actually four different countries where we shot the film in, Malta, Germany, US and Australia. And right now in 2 days it's getting released in Australia on a streaming platform called Light Our Home. And they actually a cinema chain, but because, you know, the whole world's been forced to kind of, you know, go online, so they decided their own platform to stream films for the, you know, public.
Yeah, things are very uncertain at the moment with theatre.
Indeed, and we hope things will improve soon.
Because I love cinema, I miss cinema.
Absolutely. Well, so our topic for today, our subgenre is psychological thrillers exploring identity, and I think you had a film in this area that you wanted to mention?
Yes, one of my favourite films is Split.
I've never seen a case like this before. 23 identities live in Kevin's body. Did something happen?
So, Split, a film about multiple personality disorder. What did you like about this film?
Well, for me, I like the storyline, but what really drew me in was the performance of the lead actor, James McAvoy. So he's playing all these different characters. So it's a man suffering severe multiple personality disorder, 23, as you heard in the trailer, but he just jumps from character to character. It's like a tour de force of acting, so that was what really drew me in.
Excellent. So that's one for people to consider if they're looking for films in this genre. So, lovely. Ivan, Sarah, can you tell people out there, if they're interested in finding out more about your work, is there somewhere they can go?
Everything can be found on our website, nexusproductiongroup.com. And we're also on social media if you want to look us up under Nexus Production Group.
Would that be on Facebook?
Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, and also on Twitter.
All of them.
Fantastic.
Even Pinterest now.
That's great. All right. Well, the very best of luck to you both with your work. We really hope we'll be seeing some of your work on one of our big cinema screens soon. And thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew.
Now then, what about psychological thrillers exploring identity that were shot here in Malta? Well, more mystery than psychological thriller, we have Kenneth Branagh's Murder on the Orient Express from 2017. And given its central plot, about uncovering the identity of a mysterious murder whilst on a long train journey, I'd say it qualifies as a movie in our subgenre this week, wouldn't you?
Would you mind if I join you?
You're the world-famous detective, Hercule Poirot. Avenger of the innocent. Is that what they told you in the papers?
And you are innocent?
You're fun.
Based, of course, on the celebrated works of detective mystery author Agatha Christie, Branagh's lavish production is an ensemble piece with an all-star cast, including Johnny Depp and Penelope Cruz. Also appearing is Daisy Ridley, who at the time was riding high on newfound stardom after her breakout role as Rey in 2015's Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. And Branagh himself, in addition to directorial duties here, takes on the lead role in the film, the quixotic detective Inspector Hercule Poirot, who's Belgian, by the way. Please don't make the fatal assumption that he's French. Ah non non non, ma chérie! Now, interestingly, Branagh's Murder on the Orient Express is itself a remake of the 1974 film of the same name. That film also featured a star-studded lineup, with the late great Albert Finney taking on lead duties as Poirot. And having watched both versions, I was struck at how closely Branagh hewed to the original film. It's not quite a shot-for-shot remake, but it's pretty close. But what of the Malta-based production here? Well, the opening of the 2017 remake was filmed in Valletta, here doubling up as the holy city of Jerusalem in Israel, where Poirot solves a case early in the proceedings. And once again, of course, this was a pretty big production here in Malta, bringing in work for a large local cast of extras, film crew, and artisans. Overall, Branagh's film is a worthy update to the by now quite dated 1974 version, and if you're not yet familiar with Agatha Christie's style of detective mystery, and especially if you're writing a screenplay or novel that includes any kind of procedural detective plot, then you should probably check this out. Et très rapidement, mes mesdames et messieurs, n'est-ce pas? Oui, oui!
If there was a murder...
What is going on?
Then there was a murderer. The murderer is with us.
And every one of you... He's a suspect.
And who are you?
My name is Hercule Poirot, and I am probably the greatest detective in the world.
Well, it's now time to venture beyond the shores of our hallowed Isles of Malta as we uncover some distinctive psychological thrillers exploring identity. And this week, we'll mostly be focusing on the late 1990s and early 2000s as we move through our movie selection. Let's begin with James Mangold's 2003 film, which, curiously enough, is called Identity. A random group of misfit road trippers find themselves stranded at a remote Nevada motel on a storm-swept night. But the strangers are barely getting acquainted before they start getting plucked off one by one by a mysterious killer.
There was a storm.
It was an accident. We had an accident.
And we got stuck and we couldn't get out. We couldn't get out because of the storm.
Now, James Mangold is quite a mainstay of modern Hollywood genre movies. He has a slew of quality directorial credits, the best of which include 1997's Sylvester Stallone crime drama Copland and his excellent 2007 remake of the classic western 310 to Yuma. But here, with Identity, Mangold skirts the fine line between thriller, mystery, and horror. His all-star cast includes Ray Liotta, John Cusack, and Rebecca De Mornay. This is the kind of intriguing mood piece that, in my opinion, we see all too rarely in modern movies. There's a superb motel set used for most of the film's runtime. I mean, you could almost describe this as a single location movie, though not quite. It's one of those lovely little movies which seems to be leading you in a very particular direction, later to reveal that all is not what it seems. Now, Mangold is a skilled director of actors. He's worked with many Hollywood greats, including Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz in 2010's fun comedy action movie Night and Day. And here in Identity, he gets great work from an experienced and talented cast, also chipping in a strong support from the likes of Amanda Peet and John C. McGinley. You'll probably recognize his distinctive energy from many 90s genre movies, which included a supporting role in Catherine Bigelow's superb 1991 Keanu Reeves actioner Point Break, probably one of my favorite LA set movies. But back to Identity, and if you've listened to other episodes of More Than a Movie, you'll notice that I'm usually quite careful about not revealing plot spoilers when I talk about the films. My intent here is to give you just enough of a taster of what a film's about, hopefully to intrigue you to go and look it up and check it out for yourself. So, beyond offering a very particular thematic slant on the nature of human identity itself, as the number of players in this story dwindles ever smaller, Mangold evokes a pervasive sense of sadness and melancholy, particularly in the final scenes. Not a film that I forgot in a hurry. I'd love to know what you thought of Identity.
Where did you go before? What did you see? What? Tell me what you saw.
I saw you. I saw you live in Orange Grove.
Well, and so at that, it's on to our second psychological thriller. And here we move on to Christopher Nolan's 2002 mystery thriller, Insomnia. Detective Will Dormer is under suspicion from internal affairs in Los Angeles. He and his partner are shipped away up north to the 24-hour daylight town of Nightmute, Alaska, where they've been tasked to assist in a murder case. But Dormer's particular investigative style and the interjections of a cunning antagonist ensure that events soon spiral out of control.
So incredible to be working with you. The Leland Street murders was my case study at the Academy.
Someone out there just beat a 17-year-old girl to death. Your job is to find him.
Doesn't say in the report that he clipped her nails. He washed her hair.
No mutilation?
Not this time.
He tortures him, makes him do things, and keeps him there for 3 days.
This guy, he crossed the line, and he didn't even blink.
Well, most of you will be very familiar with director Christopher Nolan's name by now. He practically reinvented the superhero genre with his excellent Dark Knight Batman trilogy between 2005 and 2012. And while this is great work from Nolan, I do recommend that fans explore his wider filmography. Nolan's first big Hollywood movie was his mind-bending neo-noir thriller Memento back in the year 2000. And that's also very much a film about broken identity. So, why haven't I included it here? Well, I think Memento's a very, very good film, but not, in my view, one of Nolan's best. For me, the central contrivance of a film told backwards in several forward-moving segments never quite gelled as a narrative construct, but still, it's a striking early piece from this auteur's impressive filmography. Now, interestingly, Summit Entertainment, the studio behind Memento, offered Nolan the director's role and a budget to make the film, pretty much off the back of a 1998 feature film that Nolan shot and directed with friends in London on a micro budget of a few thousand pounds. So, if you're interested in Nolan's inception as a filmmaker, pun intended, then do take a look at his 1998 feature, Following, which you can find on YouTube. And it's amazing how well-formed his directorial and narrative style already was, even all the way back then. Also fascinating are the various interviews Nolan has given about his filmmaking process. I'd call them pretty much essential YouTube viewing for any of you out there interested in quality modern filmmaking. But no, here I've selected 2002's Insomnia, as I do think this is one of Nolan's best and actually rather underrated films. Insomnia is a remake of a 1997 Norway set film of the same name starring Stellan Skarsgård. But Nolan's version is arguably one of those rare remakes that I would say actually betters the original in several respects. Al Pacino here is on superb form as the world-weary Detective Dormer, trying to keep his head above water as events increasingly threaten to overwhelm him. I'd call it career-best work from Pacino. There's also great supporting acting from Hilary Swank as well as the late, great Robin Williams. Now talk about a man with a body of work that's almost unparalleled in modern film, television and comedy. We were robbed of a truly wonderful talent when Robin Williams shuffled off these mortal coils. Really and truly, may he rest in peace. Back to insomnia, and there's a trope in filmmaking called the dying dream. This is when a film's story later turns out to be essentially a series of hallucinations, dreams, or fantasies. They're experienced in the mind of an unconscious character who's nearing death after a tragic accident or illness. Now, just to be clear, that's not what's happening here in the film Insomnia. But the movie, to me, very much feels like a last gasp of consciousness for our tormented protagonist, played here by Pacino. This is ironically juxtaposed with the character's complete inability to sleep for the entire film's duration. That's ostensibly due to the never-ending sunlight afforded by the town of Nightmute's high northern latitude in this season of the year. But of course, Nolan uses the metaphor of sleeplessness to powerfully hint at the real and far more disturbing source of Detective Dormer's insomnia. It's underscored by a powerful dreamlike feeling that the director evokes right from the outset, before the opening credits of this film have even rolled. And this is aided by a powerful musical score by David Julian. Witness, then, an almost lyrical study of a deeply troubled man's final waking dream. And ultimately, we move to a powerful denouement that promises to deliver Detective Dormer into the restful oblivion his body and soul so badly craves. I feel that the beauty of Nolan as a filmmaker, really, is his ability to contextualize the practical elements of a story against the bigger picture. And so here, the murders and the detective story ultimately very much take a back seat to what this film is really about. Thematically less a study of fragmented identity per se, Insomnia is really more of a rumination on how each of us must live with the darker halves of our own psyches. And what brilliant filmmaking! Check out Nolan's concise editing style, particularly in the first act of the film, where a great deal of complex exposition is flawlessly delivered. Overall, it's just a riveting watch with superb location photography, a subdued wet green color palette, and moody sound design. If you haven't seen Insomnia yet, then really, you absolutely must. Finally for today then, we move to a diametrically opposed point on the cinematic globe. Yes, it's Japan, where we're going to take a look at Kiyoshi Kurosawa's spellbinding horror thriller Cure from back in 1997. The film follows the disturbing investigations of a detective. He's dealing with the cases of several gruesome murders committed by people who have no recollection of the crimes they've committed. Now, Kurosawa is not to be confused with the earlier Japanese director Akira Kurosawa. He's well known in genre filmmaking circles and has often been cited by George Lucas. He's on record saying that Star Wars was in no small part inspired by Akira Kurosawa's classic 1958 adventure, The Hidden Fortress. But no, more recently, in the 1990s and beyond, Kiyoshi Kurosawa, in contrast, has a filmography far more focused on the genres of horror and psychological thriller. There's a famous adage in filmmaking, show, don't tell. This is to say that it's generally preferred when telling a story to exposit plot details visually, using, for example, character behavior or staged action seen in the film frame. this as opposed to characters literally telling us with words what's going on in the story. Sometimes a narrated voiceover is used for a very similar purpose. Now, Hollywood is full of very talented craftspeople, but there's a criticism of their films that's sometimes validly made about an over-reliance on telling us what's happening in a story rather than showing us. Now, in fairness, show don't tell is not an easy thing to do. Consider writing a screenplay that predominantly tells a story visually. Well, it's no mean feat. But the beauty is that when visual storytelling is done right, dialogue in a film, that is to say, the lines spoken by the actors, almost gets relegated to the role of providing texture on the filmic canvas, rather than being relied upon for continuous exposition. Well, film students looking for examples of show don't tell could do much worse than studying the films of Kiyoshi Kurosawa. I suggest starting here with Cure, perhaps along with his 2001 thriller Cairo, also known as Pulse. Kurosawa is a master of restraint and suggestion, both visually and narratively in his films. If you've watched a lot of Hollywood horror flicks, you'll be familiar with the term jump scare. This is where a loud sound effect or musical hit accompanies a sudden horrific face or apparition on the screen, making us jump out of our seats in a momentary fright. Now, these jump scares can work very well, but they're easily overused, and doing so renders them far less effective overall. In contrast, Kurosawa's films, despite often being very frightening descents into terror, are almost entirely devoid of jump scares. He simply refuses to pander to our baser cinematic instincts, instead engaging our faculties of fear through an ever-increasing sense of dread and psychological foreboding. And the director does that to superb effect here in Cure. It's a film that's moodily lit and low on action, rather focusing on the stilted accounts of various suspects and witnesses. It's all told through the harangued eyes of a troubled detective, here very powerfully performed by the acclaimed Japanese actor Koji Yakusho. And Kurosawa's trademark visual motif in many of his films is the long, locked-off wide shot. We have almost completely still shots that go on, sometimes, for minutes at a time. And at first glance, it often appears as though little is happening. But look again, because this director is skilled at careful staging for visual storytelling. It's almost theatrical, and it's quite brilliant. Though I must say, it's hard to explain the feeling this evokes in a film viewer. Just watch this movie and find out for yourself. Really, Cure is a film about the power of suggestion, how the mind can be manipulated to deceive, perturb, and derail. It's a deeply unsettling psychological study. As you watch, you're constantly being fed ideas about what's happening in the story, but without them being spelled out to you explicitly. Kurosawa's films are the antithesis of on-the-nose filmmaking, and that, in my view, is a very good thing. So, if you're keen to get beyond the shores of California's golden highways in your search for quality genre films, do please take a look at Kurosawa's Cure. Be warned, though, this is powerful and disturbing filmmaking, so please, just don't turn off the lights. Yikes. So, what did you think of today's selection in our show? Did we make you think of other worthy psychological thrillers exploring identity? Did the suggestions convince you to watch one of the films that we've mentioned? We'd love to know. So for all your opinions and any other feedback, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode, Psychological Thrillers Exploring Identity, was written and presented by Andrew Bonello. A big thank you to our guests, Evelyn Malikin and Sarah Jane Portelli, for joining us, and also, of course, to our indefatigable sound engineer, Jordi De Borno. The intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io. The clips are licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week on More Than a Movie, when we'll be exploring fantasy movies 'twixt the light and the dark.